What a gift. Let's give them another round of applause. One of the cool things about speaking is that you get to get here early and hear them practice and dance with them when they're doing it. They've got some other great things coming on. A tradition that was started over 10 years ago by Claire Austin is one we're going to repeat today. It is being able to speak your mother's name. You know, we're not always able to do that. It's not something we stand up and speak their whole name. And sometimes we don't want to do that. But sometimes we have to do that. So this morning, if you would like to, I'd like you to stand up and we will go around the room and speak your mother's name. So if you are willing to do that, go ahead and stand up and speak your mother's name. We're going to start over here with Sean. Can you say that again? I could hardly hear you. Oh, wonderful. All right. And I think we had a few other ones that wanted to speak. Go ahead and stand up and speak your mother's name. Wonderful. Thank you. Wayne. We're going to start up here, Dennis.
Belva May Ashley Billings.
Virginia Elizabeth Hunter Palmer. Gladys Emmeline Rovelin Walker.
Minda Anna Marty.
Benita Gimgarten. Julia Chaplick Connigsfeld.
Tabella Green Kenta.
Ruth Ellen Osborne Daisy.
We're going to scoot over here.
Doris May Starkybaum Jones.
Florence Rose Kimberly Smith.
Betty Corrine Smith. Okay.
Dorothy Jobson Connick.
Wow. Lisa.
Maria Concetta Nochito.
Betty Lou Swan Mertens.
Mary Catherine Young Hopkins.
All right. How about over here with
Anna Marie Boyd.
Viola Howard. Carol Veronica Van Merkham Hammer.
Evelyn Camille Waller Sledge.
Hilder Anderson Sander.
Lois Gwendolyn Hunter.
Doris Elaine Getz.
Cheryl Marie Roberts.
Evelyn Josephine Howell Schultz.
Olivia Vestas Brett.
Mabel Letha Vaughn.
Virginia Phillips Hitzenberger.
Okay, Diane, let's go over here with you.
Jean Merrill, Stephen Darling.
Elizabeth Lois Carol Harris Matz.
Beth Virginia Weemock.
Carol Joyce Aikala Anderson.
Mary Hazel Johnson Overhauser.
Charlotte Rose Harris.
Wanda Keith Hepler Brooks Muscle.
Judy Mary Emdra, I'm today, we are 64th.
for all of our mothers. There's just something so powerful in speaking those names. Did Doug get a chance? Did I get a chance? Doug. And Marsha Bessie Titchenel. So, okay, so we've got three speakers today other than myself, and so it's going to be an eclectic group, and I've asked them each to share about their own stories. So you're going to get mine, and we're going to keep them real short. What I did was I asked them to share something you don't know about us. So I don't know if you know this. You may know this, but Doug and I met when we were 20 years old. I was a very devout Presbyterian, very active in their youth group, and Whitworth became my new home after we moved from Seattle. So when he invited me to Unity, I thought, okay, I'm going to impress him, and then I'm going to check him out, because this New Age business isn't good stuff. It's not good stuff. And so during the sermon, which David McClure gave, I was checking out the hymnal, you know. I wanted to make sure the words were right, because you guys say the Lord's Prayer different than we do. Well, as it turns out, I never went back to the Presbyterian Church after that. Doug and I met in January. We got engaged in June and married in November. You didn't live together at that time. So anyway, and this year marks 40 years for us. So bless you. I'm called many things, teacher, counselor, hey you, but the very, very favorite thing that I like being called is Grand Mary. And number four is coming in June. So, and two of them are running around somewhere asking me to help them go potty. Okay, I titled this The Divine Feminine, not thinking about if you Googled Divine Feminine, you would get a lot of native, interesting, wonderful facts, which is wonderful, but that's not what it is. The Divine Feminine today is our own founding mother, Myrtle Fillmore. So I wanted to give you a little bit of background about her because, first of all, I'm a licensed teacher and I love history. So you're going to get some. So we do have a slide, and we have an audio of her, but over the speakers it doesn't come up really well. So we want to go ahead and...
In every need, God does my every hunger feed. God walks beside me, guides my way through every moment of the day. I now am wise, I now am true, patient, kind, and loving too. All things I am, can do, and be, through Christ the truth that is in me. God is my help, I shall be sick. God is my strength, unfailing Christ. God is my all, I know no fear, since God and love and truth are here. Amen.
Prayer of faith. That came out great. I think that was wonderful. So she was born Mary Caroline on August 6th of 1845. She was always in pain as a child. She would just be in that pain. She would sit in that pain and would finally be free of the pain when she allowed herself to be outside of her body. And she talks about it as a sort of meditation with the sky. Her name change came when she was diagnosed with tuberculosis and took on Myrtle Lee, and she felt that her soul actually took on Myrtle. She grew up believing that she was delicate and must be protected until she learned the truth about herself, that she is God's child and did not inherit poor health. As a child, she loved education, was very good at her studies. She finished high school during the Civil War and buried several family members in the next few years. And she became a school teacher in 1868, which, by the way, was probably one of the only professions us women could do at that time. So it's not that long ago. It's weird. She met Charles in a literary club, and they fell in love over a literary reading. I love that. From her healing and belief in prayer, she founded the Society of Silent Unity, The first words to be held in silent thought every night from April 15th to May 15th for a full month in 1890 were, and I want to read this, God is all goodness and everywhere present. He is the loving Father, and I am his child, and have all his attributes of life, love, truth, and intelligence. In him is all strength, wisdom, and harmony, and as his child, all these become mine in a recognition of the truth of what God is. So we have those qualities, those attributes, health, strength, wisdom, harmony. And I'm wondering if during the meditation, when you were thinking about the divine feminine in your life, who was that person that you put in your life? What are the characteristics of that person? Close your eyes and just think for a moment. What are the characteristics of that divine feminine within my life? So now, I have a question for you. Can you take those characteristics and make them your own? Can you embrace those characteristics that you admire about another person and make them your own? That's the goal. That's the goal. Feel free to open your eyes when you're ready. Let's take a look at her healing, at our divine feminine, Myrtle. What she did, and I think most of you already know this, is she blessed every cell in her body. The children have a song, "Every little cell in my body is healthy." And I'll do that when I, you know, nobody's looking. Except for I live in a really small apartment now, and so Doug's always looking. But she blessed every cell in her body, told her body that you are health, you are well. That was the first step. Do you know what the second step was? She apologized to her body for believing that tuberculosis was something she inherited. It's not enough just to realize that you have health. It's more that you do not believe that you have a given and inherit disease. It's the overcoming of it. The key to Myrtle Fillmore's healing and the key to silent unity is never stress the sickness. Always look to the good in every situation. She expressed these in her letters. I love this. It isn't that our prayers do anything magical. We simply hold you in the truth consciousness and help you to remember and to place your faith in God, the omnipresent good, and to use your faculties in laying hold of and using this good. The moment you sense a need and ask for a blessing, you show faith that God is responding and goodwill will come forth. I'd like to bring up our speakers. Myrtle Fillmore began the children's magazine We Wisdom, first published in August of 1893. Who will take care of the children? To speak about this, I've asked Jackie Green to come up, Reverend Jackie Green. And I asked her to come up because when I close my eyes and I think of those attributes of the divine feminine, you come to mind. And I hope that I can only become a part of what you are. The thing you don't know about Jackie might be that Jackie is the second of five children. She grew up with the desire to have five of her own, got two daughters and a whole congregation. Come on.
When Wayne and I got the microphone, when Wayne and I came to Unity, when we moved to Spokane, that's when we discovered Unity, and that's when we found our spiritual home. We were attracted to you, our spiritual family, by the way you lived your lives. My sister said, "What do they believe?" And I says, "I don't know, but I like how they live their lives. I'm going to find out." I'm really attracted to Myrtle because of how she lived her life. And as Mary mentioned, she established the children's magazine, We Wisdom. And Doug is going to show us a We Wisdom. There it is. That's one of the issues of 1915. It's framed on my wall. A friend gave it to me. And so we got a picture of it. The next picture, you'll see that's three different copies of ones over the years. And one of them, the one in the back that's tan, is the Braille version of We Wisdom. And the other one that's over here on the left, you can't really see that, that is the 97th anniversary issue. And the magazine was discontinued in 1991. It still is the oldest continuously published children's magazine in the country. And I especially love the words that Myrtle wrote in the first issue when she stated the intention of the publication quite clearly. And I would love for you to imagine her voice, and I'm going to read this to you. And it kind of reminds me of the language in the King James Version of the Bible. So you have to, you know, the language that Myrtle uniquely used. Our mission is not to entertain the children, but to call them out. To be always entertained is to be dwarfed and dependent. To be called out is to follow the harmonious law of the soul's unfoldment. Who meddles with the rosebud? What fingers are deft enough to pry open the marvel of that folded beauty? We are wise enough to leave it alone to follow the glad law of its own unfolding. But our children? Have we dealt with these buds of marvelous possibilities? Have we always remembered that they too must quicken and unfold through the innate law of their own genius? And the truth is that each of us has everything we need within us. Our youth program, all the youth programs in Unity, do not strive to stuff information in, but to create an opening for moments of self-discovery, self-realization, and self-empowerment for our youth and the volunteers who are blessed to serve them. Our youth and family ministry invites all to celebrate the divine within. Some divine feminine characteristics or qualities, I'm going to read some of them for you, and I'd like for you, like Mary was inviting you, to just kind of reflect or identify maybe these you'll own for yourself when you hear them and say, ah, yeah. Or you will be thinking of people in your life who demonstrate these divine feminine qualities. Seeks consensus and collaboration in ideas and solutions. Appreciates beauty in all its forms. Brings a joy of life to any engagement or conversation. Honors the well-being and happiness of others. Creates a space of safety and support without oppression. Invites practical solutions and applications to assure us that our path is right for us. Responds with calm, ease, and insight that transitions crisis and change with grace and wisdom. So perhaps some of those you say, yes, I recognize those divine qualities. And I certainly do. And so many of you in this congregation, and especially in Mary. Are you coming back up, Mary? Here you go.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
What kind of mother was Myrtle Fillmore? Well, she's been a companion to one man and had three other men growing up, and she was their mother. She gave birth to Lowell, Royal, and Rick.
She never got the daughter she wanted, but instead got three daughters-in-law, and of them, she says, they are suited to my sons perfectly, and that is the most important thing. I asked Sally to come up this morning because, to me, she's the epitome of vulnerability. We were in a workshop together once, and you shared something very personal, and I was able to connect with that. And that just was wonderful to be able to do that, and I appreciate that to you. You are a very kind mother, grandmother, and wisdom seeker. Please welcome Sally.
Yeah. Good morning. I'm here to talk about the power of encouragement. And I believe that it's a virtue that's described as part of the divine feminine. I have received encouragement from many people, male and female, over the years. But today, being Mother's Day, I want to honor my mother, Gladys Emmeline, who her friends called Gladdy, for that virtue. And I want to describe an example why. Now, this woman has been gone from this physical world for over 45 years. However, I vividly remember a discussion with her when I was about 8 years old. And the discussion began with her holding a report card of mine that had some less than satisfactory comments on it. The teacher apparently thought, I still have this report card, apparently thought that I talked too much in class. I was distracted easily, and I did not understand some basic mathematical concepts that I should at my age. Can't believe that. But my mother told this to me very matter-of-factly, not a hint of shaming, but very clear as she talked about it that it needed to change. I needed to improve. But the part that I remember vividly was right after that. She put that report card down, the business was done, and she looked at me. She may have even pointed a finger, I don't remember that. And she said, "That being said, Sally, I need to tell you that I think you have some special talents." I was playing violin at that point. She said music and some other ones too. I really believe that. And I don't want you to waste any of that. And so you need to look for teachers, for people who are better than you in these talents, if you're interested in them, for teachers who may or may not have lofty teaching credentials, but who want to see you succeed, even if it means in little baby steps, and will encourage you along the way. I will never forget that. So the power of encouragement. What does the literature say about this? Well, Webster tells us that encouragement means to inspire and support with courage and hope. Entrepreneur Magazine tells us encouragement. It seems like such a small thing, subtle, cute. It's the kind of thing that we do for timid kittens. But, it says, encouragement isn't cute. It's very powerful. It's empowering, and that's huge, and it's hard. It's much more compelling than motivation. On the other hand, our own Armin Brott, who writes the Ask Mr. Dad column, runs in our paper as well as many across the country, he feels that there's an abundance of praise in our culture today that praises kids for everything, where we say that, and it hurts kids more than helps, in his opinion. He says that we live in a culture where we give kids trophies just for showing up. Everything is awesome Everything is the very best I've ever seen. These embellishments, in his opinion, lose credibility very fast with the listening ears. He says, we don't encourage hard work and perseverance and forging ahead through difficulties. He also says that praise and encouragement needs to be sincere, needs to be careful. It is not promising stardom, just progress. I love that. A former Stanford University volleyball coach says, to be encouraging, you must believe that the person you're talking to, you're encouraging, has some potential, but is not trying hard enough or is not practicing in the right way. The key to encouraging, according to this coach, is to deliver the bad news, you're not practicing enough, in a way that doesn't force the person to dwell on the inadequacies, but feels motivated to move ahead. So has everyone in my life been encouraging? No. Haven't we all been around people who seem to have a natural inclination for telling you only the negative? Even though it may be true, some of those negatives, but they seem to dwell on that, or they seem to have a power of raining on your parade. Sure, we all have that. But on the other hand, I am very grateful standing up here today for all the encouragement I have had. It's really why I'm in Spokane. I was encouraged to go to graduate school way back when. I was encouraged to apply for a job at Eastern Washington University. That's why I'm here. And I'm very grateful for that. So, how do I have the chance to pay this encouragement forward? Doug. Those are 8 of Jim's and my 10 grandkids. The babies weren't there. That is a Christmas party that we have, just the kids, no parents, Jim and I. And we both work very hard at not telling them everything they do is awesome, but channeling both his mother and my mother's eye-to-eye, one-on-one encouragement of what we see in their little personalities. And boy, do they respond. So, my question to you, who in your circle of family, friends, colleagues, students, could you be encouraging just a bit more? It really could make just all the difference in someone's life. Thank you.
Thank you.
While Unity doesn't have a lot of traditions or history behind the traditions or symbols, we do celebrate many of them. And many diverse ways of thinking, one of which is the history of Mother's Day, and Murphy is going to be helping us understand that. I asked you to speak today because you, to me, is the meaning of metaphysics. You and my husband have a lot similarities. You grew up together in this movement, and you touch my heart continuously, and I know that your mother is very proud of that. So please welcome Murphy. And one of the thing you might not know about her is she's retired from massage therapy and is now pursuing her heart's desire to continue learning and obtaining her master's degree in transpersonal studies at the Edgar Cayce Institute. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And you guys are so spectacular. The choir, I love you guys. I just absolutely love you guys. So I had to say that. Okay, so... divine femininity, for me, is what is truly in our makeup. It's what's deep within our core. It's within every woman. Men have the feminine side as well, but today is Mother's Day. So it's a day to honor mothers and women. So I want to share my story with you, and then I'm going to read you the original Mother's Day proclamation. As a young girl, I was a super athlete. I ran fast. I played hard. And I would often hear, just like that recent Nike commercial, wow, you don't play like a girl, throw like a girl, or run like a girl. And my response was always, yes, I do. I always preferred team sports. The strength of the feminine spirit was so powerful within my teams. We nurtured one another. We encouraged one another. Each of us drawing on our inner strength, our feminine power, to become just a little bit better. By the time I finished high school, my accomplishments landed me a full ride to play basketball here in Whitworth. My college experience was even more powered by our divine feminine strength. We were a group of young women who were fierce competitors and yet played with an amount of grace that was hard to rival. And then life continued on. Work, 6 years in the United States Navy. And then in 2007, at the age of 43, I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. I had to pull deep from within myself to once again find that inner strength. I spent basically one solid year in bed. Within that 11-month period, I went through 4 major surgeries and my entire chemotherapy regime. In my youth, as an athlete, I was compared to the boys, but nothing compared to the internal struggle that I had during this year. You see, I was physically stripped of everything considered feminine. I had both of my breasts removed. My thick red hair was gone. I had eyelashes that would rub on my glasses. They disappeared too. And then I topped that all off with a complete hysterectomy. I remember thinking one day, so who am I now? I can't even take hormones due to the kind of cancer that I had. Did I just by default turn into some androgynous person? Did I need to recreate myself? So during that time of introspect, I found that I had an inner strength and an inner gentleness. I learned that my divine feminine is not on the outside. It never has been. My femininity is about my strength, and that is what pulled me through as the months progressed. I no longer run faster, throw further, or jump higher, but I do feel more, I love more, and I care more. I truly understand what it means to draw on my divine femininity and be exactly who I have come here to be. To quote Maya Angelou, she goes where she will without pretense and arrives at her destination prepared to be herself and only herself. This is the same power and the core that the strength of the original Mother's Day proclamation, which was written in 1870 by Julia Ward Howe. She also wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. Mother's Day was not created to send mom flowers or to eat more chocolate. Mother's Day was recreated after the Civil War by women pulling from their divine femininity in protest to the carnage of that war and to lend support to those women who had lost their husbands and sons in battle. Mother's Day began as a holiday that commemorated women's public activism, not as a celebration of a mother's devotion to her family. The story begins in 1858, when a community activist named Anna Reeves Jarvis organized Mother's Work Day in West Virginia. Her immediate goal was to improve sanitation in the Appalachian communities. During the Civil War, Jarvis pried women from their families to care for the wounded on both sides. Afterward, she convened meetings to persuade men to lay aside their hostilities. In 1872, Julia Ward Howe proposed an annual Mother's Day for Peace. Committed to abolish war, Howe wrote the Mother's Day Proclamation. In 1913, Congress declared the second day of Sunday in May to be Mother's Day. Here now is the Mother's Day Proclamation, written by Julia Howard Ward in Boston in 1870. Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether our baptism be of that of water or of fears. Say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe our dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil, at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing after their own time the sacred impress, not of Caesar, but of God. In the name of womanhood and of humanity, I earnestly ask that a general Congress of women without limit of nationality be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and at the earliest period consistent with its objects, to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, the great and general interests of peace.
Well, in conclusion, I'm hoping that the committee put together some wonderful words for you and that you can take on the characteristics that we all spoke about and the ones that are in your heart. Let's give us a round of applause.